What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 96 of Star Wars Beneath Twin Suns, a massive breakdown podcast coming to you only one night late, not too late this time, almost back on track, which I'm pretty impressed with considering how long we were on break for. But we're going to be talking about two episodes. This is a two-part arc, which is something that happened a couple of times in the first season, and we don't really see a lot more of it after this. This is a two-part arc. It is Dooku captured and the Gungan general. And I was pretty excited for at least part of this arc, because Hondo Ohnaka, this is our introduction to him, and he's one of my favorite characters in Star Wars, but I actually didn't remember a ton other than just like the general idea of this storyline, so I was pretty excited to dive into it. But before we dive into it, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined today by Kit Ketcha. And how are you doing today, Kit?
I'm doing pretty fantastic today, as ever. I've actually been spending a ton of my free time lately helping my daughter's robotics team. So it's kind of nice to chill out and, relax. It's a competition season for them. So they're getting ready for a big competition at the end of the month. So I've kind of had a lot on my plate there, but it's hard to complain because I'm fundamentally helping them build like a Lego Technic robot to complete missions and can compete in this competition. So like really hard to be like, oh, it was so much work.
Right.
Working on robot all day. So yeah. So I've kind of been, doing that and then chilling out and watching some Clone Wars. I am ready to talk about this one, especially like you said, Hondo Ohnaka is a longtime favorite. Still rooting to someday get a live action Hondo appearance. It could happen. Hondo's like in multiple franchises already, so I feel like at some point they're gonna find the right actor, and that's when we'll get Hondo in live action. But in the meantime, we've got this, and this is a great introduction, and I think sets the tone for so much of this character going forward.
Yeah, he is kind of in live action at Galaxy's Edge. There's a ride, and Hondo Ohnaka is kind of like the narrator of the ride. You're like supposed to be, a smuggler working for him, which is pretty fun. It's a pretty good ride, so he's in that. So if you ever make your way down to Walt Disney World in Orlando, and I assume maybe in Disneyland in California as well. I think there's two Galaxy's Edges. I think there's one at each one, but I've only been to the one in Orlando and it was a great time. I went before a hurricane? No, I went during COVID and it was at 25% capacity maximum. So there were no lines and no crowds.
Dang.
And it was fantastic. And I was like, I would pay extra to only come to Disney on days like this.
Seriously.
is what I remember. So that was a great time. Really enjoyed that. But these were good episodes. I was a little bit disappointed in them because they tacked a Jar Jar episode onto the end of like a Hondo episode. But at the same time, like, I still had a good time. I really enjoyed the dynamic that was on display of like Dooku being forced to work together with Anakin and Obi-Wan, and it's a shame almost that like how Dooku's story ends, because you feel like inside of him there's a little part of him that's not fully, truly, completely evil, there's still some of that Jedi master in there, and it was fun watching him cooperate with our two heroes. So I quite enjoyed that part of it, and obviously I enjoyed everything about Hondo Ohnaka and the pirates, right? Like I love that entire vibe that they give off, and they fit perfectly in the Star Wars universe, don't they?
Oh, they do. And, so fun fact, I was telling you about this already, but I think our listeners should be aware that there is an audiobook available called Stories of Light and Darkness. And it's a Clone Wars audiobook. So it features essentially retellings of a number of different Clone Wars story arcs, including this one. And I was hesitant to get it because I thought, oh, it's just going to be kind of the same stories, and I can already watch these, right? Why do I need to listen to them? But my daughter loves the Clone Wars, and this was one of the last Clone Wars audiobooks that we hadn't listened to. So I was like, okay, we'll get it, but I might return it if it's, you know, not worth keeping. I've kept it. And it did something really interesting. It actually retells these stories rather than kind of, you know, telling them as you see them on the screen. It picks a point of view character and tells them from that point of view. So this story is told from Dooku's point of view, which I think was just an excellent choice because we get all of his internal monologue and commentary on everything that's happening and sort of his like justifications for when things go badly for him and criticisms of Obi-Wan and Anakin. And it's just really, really a joy to listen to. It's very entertaining. And there's a bunch of other, you know, stories in that audiobook that are told in that sort of that same manner, giving you kind of that glimpse into the head of a character in one of the Clone Wars stories. So I don't know if you know, it's necessarily worth it to everybody, but I really expected to be returning it and it didn't happen. So that's my endorsement right there.
And it's correct me if I'm wrong, but it's voice acted by the people who are the voice actors for the characters in the show, at least to some extent, right?
I believe so. I believe they got most of the actual voice actors from the show to come in for the audiobook. So it's really like the production value is good, which I sort of expected, although it can be hit or miss. But for this audiobook, it was really quite good. Man, I very surprised. So
yeah, because I'm looking at it and Corey Burton, it says stories read by Corey Burton, Nika Futterman, Olivia Hack, Matt Lanter, Catherine Tabor, James Earl Taylor, Sam Wilbur. Corey Burton is Dooku. Mm-hmm. Nika Futterman is Asajj Ventress. I don't know who Olivia Hack is. Matt Lanter is Anakin. Catherine Tabor is Padme. James Earl Taylor is Obi-Wan. And Sam Witwer, I believe, is Maul. So, I mean, they got almost the entirety of the cast there. Not Ashley Eckstein, though, for Ahsoka Tano, which was a little odd.
Yeah, hard to know, you know, with schedules, if they, you know, what goes on, if they're not able to get everybody. But I think they did a pretty good job getting, you know, the vast majority of the original voice actors. Anyways, all that to say, this is a really fun storyline, and I'm pretty excited to talk about it. So we can just jump right in if you're all set here.
Yeah, all right. So yeah, they kind of bring us in, was it in media res or whatever, like in the middle of a story. I actually, when I played this initially, I was like, wait a minute, did I miss an episode? Because like they do a recap at the beginning of the episode talking about how Anakin, you know, tracked down Dooku, but then got himself captured. And now Obi-Wan is trying to break him out. And it sounded like something that we would have seen in an episode. So I backed out for a second and was like, wait a minute. And I had to make sure that I hadn't like skipped an episode or something. But no, I hadn't. So we start where Anakin is captured. He's on kind of Dooku's flagship, which is secretly hanging off in the middle of, you know, the Outer Rim, just kind of doing nefarious things, I'm sure. But Anakin's been captured and Obi-Wan has tracked him down, and Obi-Wan sneaks onto the starship and frees Anakin. And it turns out that the whole plan was that Anakin was going to allow himself to be captured. Mm-hmm. You know, he's going to put up a fight, but he was going to be unarmed, allow himself to be captured, knowing that he would be taken up on Dooku's ship. And then when Obi-Wan came to break him out, they could both be on the ship and they could work together to try to apprehend Dooku. The droids just totally oblivious to everything that's going on this ship at all times, basically. And you got to feel that for someone like Dooku, it's probably fine. And we see him meditating, but it'd be pretty lonely being the only living being on a droid staffed ship, wouldn't you think? I was thinking about that when they were walking around and all you could see were droids.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I think it could be a very surreal experience to be, yeah, like you said, just sort of a solitary living creature on what's functionally an automated starship.
Yeah. Did you appreciate Obi-Wan's line where he opens the cell and there's the two like Nikto prisoners in there?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're not the prisoners I'm looking for. And just like, you know, closes the door again. I was like, oh, that's a nice reference. They do a lot of these in the early scenes. I don't remember if this carries on throughout the entire series, but there are a lot of original trilogy and prequel trilogy references in terms of quotes and stuff like that.
Yeah, there are some, honestly, a lot of great lines in these episodes, I have to say. But yeah, no, pretty funny. And well, anyways, he does manage to find Anakin's cell. It's like the Nyx went over. He was just one off. And Anakin is ready to jump him. Not realizing that it's Obi-Wan coming into the cell.
I did appreciate that. Good banter back and forth between Anakin and Obi-Wan. Pretty much the entire thing. It was extremely reminiscent of the prequels. Like, mm-hmm. I really, really felt like it was, it felt like Revenge of the Sith banter back and forth, where they're crashing the ship in Revenge of the Sith, and they're just, you know, Obi-Wan's making light of the situation, but criticizing Anakin's, you know, piloting skills and stuff like that. So I enjoyed the banter back and forth. It, I will say this, it's not, you know, the best written banter that's ever existed, but it felt like George Lucas banter is what it felt like. And so I can respect it for what it is. Right. They managed to, you know, break into Dooku's quarters, and they think they've got him surrounded. At that exact moment in time, Ahsoka shows up with Rex and one of the Republic starships and starts basically, you know, attacking Dooku's ship. But Dooku has a trapdoor underneath him, because of course he does. And the trapdoor deposits him neatly into the hangar, where he hops on his solar sailor and flies away. And Anakin and Obi-Wan have to try to chase him down in a, I believe it's a Nemoidian vessel. I think it's called a Sheathapede class transport shuttle. But there happens to be one in the hangar that they can kind of commandeer and take after him. And Dooku doesn't really seem perturbed by any of this. He's the picture of calm, cool, and collected throughout this entire experience, which is pretty impressive. But I'm interested to hear, does the story that you were talking about, does it start here? Or does it start once he's already been captured?
Oh, so it's been a little bit since I last listened to it. So I believe it does pick up with them confronting him on the ship. I believe that's where it picks up with Dooku. So we actually do get essentially the full story of the episode. Dooku essentially recounting that he's captured Skywalker, and then the two of them appear, and it sort of continues on from there.
Interesting. So they manage to land a hit on him, which forces him to make an emergency landing on a nearby planet. But unfortunately, a droid fighter, I believe it rams into them. And so they also have to crash land. So they can sense Dooku hiding in a nearby cave. But of course, Dooku, being who he is, ambushes them and causes, you know, the ceiling to collapse. Anakin's able to use the Force to protect himself from the falling rocks, but loses his lightsaber. And Dooku nabs it ever so easily. I really appreciated his use of the Force to like bring the lightsaber to him and then like notch it onto his belt without touching it. I was like, that's pretty slick. That's just showing off at a certain point in time, but I did appreciate it. And Dooku bounces out of the cave and seals it, trapping Anakin and Obi-Wan in there. And unfortunately for them, they're also not alone. There's another creature in there with them, but Dooku gets out and goes back to his ship and finds the pirates already at his ship, unloading supplies and kind of pillaging it.
Mm-hmm.
And Did you appreciate the pirates like UFO looking ship that their ship yes. actually looks like a UFO?
Yes.
I thought that was very funny.
I did laugh every time I saw them on screen. I think a number of Hondo's ships actually are UFO shaped throughout the series, if I recall.
Yeah, a lot of them are of various sizes, but they said on StarWars.com when I was reading the trivia for this episode, they said that they'd had concept art of like these 1950 style UFOs for years and years. They'd had it as, in episode one, they had an idea for a Trade Federation craft. They had an idea for an Alderaanian vessel, but they never actually made them, like they never actually got them onto screen until this episode. But I really did like it. I thought that was pretty neat.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And it is sort of entertaining, you know, Dooku kind of finds them pillaging the ship, and Hondo's just kind of like, you know, incredibly confident about the entire thing. Immediately, you know, recognizes that Dooku is likely very wealthy. I don't know if he immediately knows who he is, but he's going to figure it out pretty quickly.
Well, I think he knows initially that he's extremely rich, just yeah. given the Solar Sailor itself is like basically a space yacht, right? So it's not really a poor person ship, and he's got a ton of supplies and stuff like that. I appreciate how cool Dooku stays during all this. I got the feeling that if Dooku wanted to, he probably could have done that, but he almost, it came across to me like he just didn't really want to bother himself. Like it was easier for him just to allow himself to be captured and see what comes of it, because it really felt to me like he could probably have killed them all if he'd really wanted to, but he would have had to like break a sweat, and that would be undignified of him. And so he like wouldn't stoop to that level. Right. Like Dooku is the type of person who has never in his entire life given off the appearance of trying hard at anything. He always stays like calm, cool, collected. And these people weren't worth him like trying hard. So he's just like, nah, we'll see how it goes.
In the audiobook version, you definitely get like, he certainly attempts to give that impression. I believe the audiobook is actually written as him recording like a report of these events to Darth Sidious, in the hopes that like Sidious might learn something of value about Obi-Wan or Skywalker or these pirates. And he certainly attempts to cast himself in the best possible light. Like it's very clear that the telling, like it's clearly sort of a semi unreliable narrator,
right?
Where he's sort of like justifying why things went down the way they did. And like when he, you know, is successful at something, he's very much like sort of blowing up how brilliant he is. I very much get that impression as well, that his self-confidence is so high that he almost believes himself that that's true, whether it's true or not.
Yeah, the only thing that I thought that seemed like it surprised him was that little Kowalkian monkey lizard pilfered yeah. both of the lightsabers off of his belt without him noticing. And that, but yeah, I mean, Hondo, it turns out that Hondo has been kind of playing dumb, just going along with the, oh, you're just some rich guy who crash landed here, huh? And it turns out he knows very well who he is. And he's like, well, you know, one way or the other, we're going to get paid for you. You know, I bet if the Separatists would pay to have you back, that the Republic will pay probably twice as much. That's just good yeah. business.
Yeah. Oh, man. The Hondo lines in this episode are phenomenal. And you do, you know, you do see sort of the cunning, of Hondo and Naka and kind of the he's a very sort of like, I don't want to say like base, but he's sort of like a, like he's predictable in his duplicity. And yet it happens in such a way that like, he's so sort of, he seems like he shouldn't be that competent. And then he just repeatedly is.
Yeah, he plays himself as like the simple pirate captain that you think you could outsmart so easily because he talks a certain way and he acts a certain way. But then it turns out he's actually very, very good at what he does. Mm-hmm. And it's a, you know, it's a carefully crafted character in the story to put people at ease around him by thinking like, oh, I'm smarter than this guy. But then you're actually not. He actually has the situation under control. So that's part of the reason why I love Hondo. And he's the perfect amount of like a gray character where he is a bad guy, but he's not a bad guy. Sometimes he's a good guy, but then other times he is a bad guy. And it's he straddles that line so nicely that he's really just, you know, super fun in every single episode that he's in, basically. But meanwhile, 100%. The Jedi are stuck in the cave. They disturb a Gundark, but they do manage to knock it out. Unfortunately, when they knock it out, it kind of cracks the floor and unleashes a gas that begins to suffocate them. But Ahsoka Tano shows up with the clone troopers in just the nick of time to get a little bit of her sass in there. She doesn't have a ton of lines in this episode, but she does sass Anakin just a little bit where he's like, oh, you know, we had it under control. She's like, really, which part did you have under control? Was it the giant Gundark, or was it the poison gas, or was it the cave that you guys, you know, brought down on top of you and were trapped in?
Yeah. Yeah. It's once again, they're sort of trying to take some of the wind out of her sails, but in this particular case, they have very little ammunition with which to do so. And they are entirely undermined when she says, you know, or was it that Gundark right there behind you? As the Gundark has recovered from the rocks that they had used to knock it out. And she orders the clone troopers to cave in the entrance again.
So I do believe that this was the first time we see a Gundark in any Star Wars stuff. But it was mentioned, obviously, in The Empire Strikes Back. You know, Han makes a comment to Luke that, you know, you look strong enough to pull the ears off a Gundark. And so when they animated the Gundark, they gave it big ears as a reference to that comment, which I thought was somewhat interesting. So that's kind of a funny thing. But they, Hondo Ohnaka somewhat wisely calls Chancellor Palpatine. Somehow he has Chancellor Palpatine's direct number, it appears, and he gives him a call. And says, hey, you know, we've got Dooku here. I'm sure you guys are willing to pay handsomely for him. And Palpatine, being his Palpatine / Darth Sidious self, like tries to play it off like, oh, no, you don't really have Dooku. Because Dooku being captured actually would be quite bad for Palpatine. So he tries to play it off like, no, that's clearly a fake. But Hondo's like, well, actually, I have his lightsaber. And the Jedi in the room can verify that is his lightsaber. That's not something anybody would just be able to come up with. And Padme is like, you know, we've got to take this opportunity. We might never get a chance to capture Dooku again. So they say, okay, well, Anakin and Obi-Wan are already out there. You guys go verify, go talk to Hondo. But Hondo's like, nope, they have to come unarmed, which obviously makes you think you're walking into a trap, but don't really have a choice.
Well, you know, as Hondo's mother told him, why have one hostage when you can have two? And three hostages? That's just good business.
That's just good business. Yeah.
Oh, I would have loved to have met Hondo's mother at some point. Sounds like a wonderful woman.
I appreciate the fact that Anakin and Obi-Wan walk into Dooku's cell and they're making fun of him. And Dooku's like, don't worry, you'll be here soon enough. Like, you'll join me. And they're like, well, maybe, but for now we're not. And Dooku says the Weequay are devious and deceitful and most importantly, stupid. And you will underestimate them at your own peril. Some good foreshadowing.
It is. It is. And the I have to say, the gloating from Dooku when they do end up captured in the audiobook is hilarious. So they, they verify that Dooku is in fact being held prisoner by the least likely of all people in the galaxy, it seems. And as they are sort of walking through the Weequay's settlement or stronghold or whatever you want to call it, they are interrupted by one of them who says, you know, you must attend our, you're cordially invited to attend our banquet tonight. And a Weequay banquet is not something to be missed.
Yeah, the invited part was a little, invited isn't the right word. They were strongly encouraged that they were going to go to this banquet.
Yeah, it definitely didn't seem
optional.
Optional.
Yeah. So they they confirm to Palpatine and Mace Windu that it is indeed Dooku who's being held by the pirates. And Palpatine says, all right, I'm going to send Senator Karis and Representative Binks with the ransom in exchange with the Sith Lord. I get the feeling that he's sending Representative Binks under the express intent that Senator Binks is going to mess something up and cause some issue one way or the other. But Anakin and Obi-Wan take their seats at the banquet. And of course, they're given refreshments, which we see are very clearly drugged. And Hondo tries to convince them to toast. You know, he says a toast to a successful transaction. But the Jedi are smarter than that. And they swap their drinks with the Weequay and the Nikto sitting next to them. Returning the toast to an alliance with powerful pirates and new friends. And of course, the two people they swap their drinks with just instantly pass out. And Anakin, you know, brings up a good point. He's like, how is it possible that these drunken pirates were able to capture the Count when we could not? And Obi-Wan says, you know, don't be too proud to accept, you know, a gift that comes our way. And so they make their own toast, which is to unexpected gifts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it kind of leaves us there right at the end of the episode. And I mean, it's a good little episode so far for what it is. It this is a strange one because it feels short but not unsatisfying. But it's also one where it's a clear cliffhanger where we know the next episode is immediately going to pick up with the story. Thank goodness. But, you know, despite the fact that this one just felt really fast to me, it felt like it just sort of like was one thing and then another, and suddenly I was at the end already. But I wasn't unhappy with that.
Yeah, it definitely was very short. It definitely didn't tell what I felt was like a satisfying story in its own right. It felt even weirder to me that it picked up in what seemed like this was a 3-episode arc that they took the first episode of and were like, actually, we can just summarize this, which is what I wish they had done with that stupid Downfall of a Droid episode. But they did it with this one, and I actually was interested in the beginning part of a story. So I wasn't totally in love with that because it sounded like it would have been, you know, something interesting. But I don't really have any issues with this particular part of the story, other than just, yeah, it felt like a middle episode of a 3-part arc. You know, it picks up in the middle of the action and it leaves kind of with like, oh, tune back in next week for the conclusion to the thrilling story. And so, you know, as what it is, you know, I think rating wise, like 7.5 or 8 is probably fine. I wasn't like blown away by the episode. Honestly, the best part of it is the banter back and forth between Obi-Wan, Anakin, and Dooku, and Hondo being there. But other than that, it's kind of, you know, the story itself's kind of forgettable, I think. So I think it's an average to above average, like, intro episode.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agreed. It is. I actually paused it to make sure that I hadn't somehow missed a previous episode. When it started, I was like, did I click the right episode? But it worked well, you know, it got us to the action. And it's kind of a, it feels like a strange episode to rate, because while there's a bunch of major players in the series like involved, the episode itself sort of just feels weird compared to a lot of the other ones, because there's no military action, there's no political action. It's fundamentally Dooku makes an escape and then pirates.
Yeah.
So that said, I did enjoy it. Like the first number that comes to mind is a 7.5, which feels low for a Hondo episode. But I guess there's just not a lot that makes it stand out in a big way to me.
Well, this isn't Hondo's best work, right? This is his introduction. Like, yeah. You don't really know from this episode the type of character that he ends up being, because it just drops little hints that, like, maybe he's smarter than he looks and acts. But it doesn't really do a ton with him, like what gets done later on. This episode, to me, I was just thinking about this. This episode, to me, is one of the episodes that feels like a kid's show, right? Like, there are so many episodes of Clone Wars that don't feel like a kid's show at all, that have real stakes and, you know, real emotional messages and real morals and stuff. And this, to me, between the banter and the silliness of the pirates, it felt like a kid's show episode, which isn't bad, but that's really what it felt like. It felt like you had three really powerful main characters who were thrown together in kind of a goofy, silly situation, where, you know, Dooku and Obi-Wan and Anakin would kill each other in most situations they're in. And here they're just like kind of having a chit chat, right? You know, it was a bit of lighthearted, kind of silly, goofy fun, but there wasn't any gravitas to it. There wasn't anything that's exceptional about the episode. So, you know, I think a 7.5 seems fair.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels low, but same time is what it is.
Yeah. So moving on to the Gungan general, Anakin and Obi-Wan somehow, they didn't explain this, right? So they swapped their drinks with other pirates. Mm-hmm. Somehow they still got drugged anyways. Right.
Yeah.
Which is a weird thing to the episode, like a weird opening to the episode. But they wake up in the pirate cell. Despite their precautions, they've been drugged anyways, right? Not only are they locked in the cell with Count Dooku, but they're also chained together. So even if one of them were to try to escape, they'd have to bring the others with them, which is pretty funny.
Yeah, so IMDb even lists the beginning of this episode as a goof, because there's just no explanation for what happened. My assumption is that they just drugged like all the drinks.
Right.
And they were like, yeah, our guys probably have strong enough stomachs to be fine.
Yeah, and who cares if they get knocked out? They don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll sleep it off. They're going to end up unconscious anyways.
I thought it would have been funnier if they had like actually gotten hammer drunk and blacked out. And then that had been what got them captured. I thought that would have been really silly, but obviously I didn't think they were going to do that. But I did think that would have been funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting beginning to the episode. You know, Count Dooku says, you know, I've been unable to separate us from each other. I've been attempting to separate our chains, but we're bound together. And Anakin's just like, can you liberate me from having to listen to your voice?
Man. Yeah, some good sass from him.
There's some serious sass from all parties in this episode. There are so many good lines. We'll get to it at some point here. You know, Obi-Wan's like telling Dooku to hurry up, and Anakin says, you should be more patient, Master. After all, the Count is an elderly gentleman and doesn't move like he used to. And Count Dooku replies, I would kill you both right now if I did not have to drag your bodies. It's just like, oh, this is gold. This, like, why don't we get these characters together more often?
That was like It was my favorite part of the episode was the back and forth between Dooku and Obi-Wan and Anakin. Like, out of both these episodes, that was by far my favorite part. I really liked that dynamic. It's not a dynamic that we see often, and I thought it was done very effectively, and I really enjoyed that. And that was probably the part that, you know, I had the most fun watching. But, you know, meanwhile, on the other side, the stuff that I didn't really have a good time watching was Jar Jar Binks and Senator Karras are flying out to the Pirate's Lair with a bounty of spice on board as ransom for Dooku. They've also got Commander Stone and a couple of additional clones. Jar Jar, being Jar Jar, completely screws everything up, somehow gets himself stuck in the cockpit, and then gets himself stuck not in a seat, and Senator Karras has to get out of his seat to help Jar Jar, which then somehow, I guess, leads to Senator Karras' seatbelt malfunctions, and he gets killed when they get shot down.
Yeah, so this is actually, I find parts of this episode, like, to be incredibly dark. Like, Jar Jar is directly responsible for this other senator's death.
Well, I think they tried to play it off like he would have died anyways, right? Like, his seatbelt broke. Like, maybe he would have broke. Maybe it would have broken even if he hadn't gotten up to help Jar Jar. Like, I felt like they were trying to give Jar Jar a little bit of plausible deniability here, where, like, he gets stuck up in the cockpit, right? But him being in the cockpit isn't what leads to the ship getting shot down. The ship was going to get shot down anyways, right? Like, he actually doesn't cause. So in the past, one of the things that has annoyed me about Jar Jar is that, like, his ineptitude directly leads to bad things happening. And the version of Jar Jar that I like more is Jar Jar's ineptitude leads to bad things happening for the bad guys, right? I can live with that version of Jar Jar. I don't like the version of Jar Jar that causes bad things to happen for the good guys through his ineptitude, like destroying Padme's ship in the Bombad Jedi episode, right? I don't love that. I love him getting the droid stuck to his foot in the Phantom Menace and pulling the droid around and shooting all the other droids, right? Like, that, yeah, that's something I can live with. So in this, instead of him being directly the reason why the ship is shot down, he causes an issue, but his issue is rectified, and then the ship gets shot down anyways, right? So it's not his fault. With the senator, I felt like it was the same thing. He causes an issue. It's almost like a little bit of a red herring. You think that he's going to be the reason why the senator dies, but when the senator goes to sit back down, his restraint is broken, right? And I don't know that that was Jar Jar's fault. And I think they were trying to be like, oh, Jar Jar is causing issues, but the senator would have died anyways, you know. But it's kind of dark. They introduced the senator just to kill him off. Like, he gets, like, thrown into the corner of the ship when the ship crash lands, and he's just dead.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal. Like, you can't help but feel bad for him.
They had to do an alien senator, I bet. I bet this is one of the things where, like, because it's a kid show, that couldn't have been a human senator that, like, died. It had probably to be an alien.
Yeah, probably. Well, I think we need to go and check back in with our Weequay pirate friends here, because we've got some scenes with Turk Falso.
They named one of them for some reason.
Yes. And what a name, Falso. So Turk Falso questions Hondo's decision to attempt to ransom Dooku to the Republic. He thinks the Separatists would have paid more. And Hondo is incredibly dismissive toward Falso. He's just like, why do I even keep you around? If we tried to ransom Dooku to the Separatists, they would have just sent a droid army here to wipe us out instead of sending the ransom.
Which he's probably correct about.
Yeah, you can't argue with Hondo's logic. Like, that's 100% what would have happened. You know, that said, Falso is no less duplicitous than Hondo himself and has his own plan in place. So he's planning to... He's the one who's made the plan, right, to shoot down the ship. So he's heading out there to attempt to collect the ransom from the wreckage. And it almost works.
It's does it not remind you these Weequay? Do they not remind you of the Ferengi from Star Trek: The Next Generation? Like, that's what I think of every time I hear, like, it would have been more profitable to do this. Like, it reminds me of the Ferengi. Like, that's exactly what I think when I see these characters, which is a good thing because I think the Ferengi are very funny. But yeah, so they do manage to shoot down the shuttle. Karras and the two pilots die, which is unfortunate. Jar Jar subsequently gets command, much to the chagrin of the clones, who I think they ask, Commander Stone, they're like, "Aren't you in charge?" And he's like, "No, there is another who's in charge." And they like look at it's Jar Jar doing some Jar Jar ass thing. Now, I mentioned this to you before the episode began, but I immediately was able to notice that this was not Ahmad Best. It was played differently to me, and I don't know if it was that it was played less enthusiastic or he sounded almost like he was like sick or something. So I looked it up, and it was credited to a man named B.J. Hughes, who it appears is a pseudonym of Phil LaMarr, who Phil LaMarr is an extremely famous voice actor. He's been in a lot of stuff. You might know him as Hermes Conrad in Futurama, and also as Marvin in Pulp Fiction, if you remember that movie. But he, I guess, did not want to be credited for this under his real name, so he went by B.J. Hughes. And it was actually Ahmad Best who outed him on Twitter, which was kind of funny. But yeah, I don't like this version of Jar Jar as much. One of the only tolerable things about Jar Jar to me in the Clone Wars episodes has been Ahmad Best voice acting, which I feel like is so enthusiastic that it brings a little bit of an infectious, happiness to the character, even if I don't like what the character's doing. And I felt like it was lacking in this. But they also, I felt like, massively toned down his antics in this episode as well.
I don't know if I would go that far. I felt more like they directly acknowledged his antics and almost like began consciously using it as a plot device.
Well, they definitely did. I mean, the clones 100% did. They're like, let's send Jar Jar out there to do something because he'll certainly mess something up one way or the other.
I believe the clone commander says something to the effect of, "Don't worry, he's smarter than he looks."
Yeah. Well, I mean, what does he do? So, we're skipping ahead a little bit here, right? But
We are, yeah.
okay, so let's go back. So, with no choice but to work together, Dooku and Anakin and Obi-Wan do manage to escape.
From their cell.
Initially they manage to escape, but that stupid little monkey lizard, the Kowalkian monkey lizard, whose name is actually Pilf, right? And some weird trivia, there's apparently supposed to be two of them that were twins, but then they were like, "No, we just need one." So we end up with just Pilf. Catches them and they're reincarcerated. They escape a second time and they try to pole vault over the wall, which is ridiculous in its own right. And they are recaptured again because Hondo happens to be there. So two escapes, two failures.
And so there's a great moment here where they're like, Anakin is like hanging from the wall with I think both Obi-Wan and Dooku hanging from him. And he's shouting at Obi-Wan to drop Dooku. And then the audiobook version of this, remember, it's from Dooku's perspective. Dooku is like basically like both irritated and a little impressed. He's like, "That is the right thing to do."
He should have dropped me.
Yeah, he should have. He's like, perhaps Obi-Wan's apprentice shows a little more promise. But it's to no avail as they are, of course, recaptured once again, as you said. Only this time, Hondo is like, "Well, I guess this means we won't be friends."
Yeah.
And man, again, there's Hondo's lines are so just so delightful throughout this episode. We'll come back here in a minute. So, where were we with Jar Jar and the clones?
Turk Falso had headed out to go try to, you know, salvage the ransom. The ship has crashed near a bunch of acid geysers, and Jar Jar actually has a brief moment of intelligence here. And I think this is probably, this series of Jar Jar-esque things is why this episode didn't bother me a ton. He notices that the local animals like run away from the geysers when the geysers are about to explode. So in order to save his, you know, delegation, he has them all jump into a geyser knowing that it's not about to explode, which then makes the Weequays think, oh, well, the acid's going to kill them, so we'll just leave them be, right? So the Weequays leave, and Jar Jar's group obviously survives in the geyser because it hasn't exploded. And they get back to the wreckage of the shuttle. They find that the Weequays obviously took the spice ransom. The clones want to wait for reinforcements, but Jar Jar is like, no, we need to, you know, we need to go after them because they took our ransom. Like, we can't let them have that. We need to go get it back. And somehow, by some stretch of Jar Jar, you know, miracle magic, he actually manages to ride those little native animals. I believe they're called Scalders, which kind of makes sense considering they're next to acid geysers. Right. So they intercept the pirates and they defeat them, and they get the spice back. And then they decide that I don't know if they think that these pirates aren't linked to the other pirates, but they decide to push on towards the actual pirate base. And
well, it's Jar Jar. It's Jar Jar who makes that decision. The clones actually say we should wait for reinforcements, which is probably, you know, the tactically sound decision. But Jar Jar insists that they must continue on to deliver the ransom, and he doesn't, at this point, they don't know that the Jedi have been captured, right? They have no information. So he's just like, you know, we have to go and deliver the ransom and get Dooku. It's what the other senator would have wanted us to do, or what he would have done, is what Jar Jar says.
And they do bury him, don't they? Like, they bury the senator at the thing. That's kind of respectful. His little staff apparently is a reference to which Indiana Jones is it? Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's the staff of Ra, and apparently that's what it was based on for this. So yeah, they bury him, they cover him in stones and everything. So Jar Jar's showing a little bit of respect, trying to honor his what he imagines his last wishes would have been.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so at this point they start following a series of power supply lines that lead to the pirate base. Meanwhile, Turk also has fled and successfully returned back to the base, and he tells Hondo the Republic's brought an army to free the Jedi, which
living
is
up
a
to
gross
his name,
exaggeration.
Huh?
Yeah. He suggests that they dispatch their tanks to counterattack. And first off, I just want to say, how impressive is it that Hondo the pirate has multiple tanks? Like, clearly an excellent pirate. Hondo is, I think, a little skeptical, but, you know, he reluctantly agrees to send the tanks and says, I'll deal with the Jedi myself.
I feel like he's a little disappointed. I feel like he really wanted that money and really didn't want to have to potentially fight people. But he dispatches the tanks, and he becomes less friendly. Now we see like the dark side of Hondo a little bit, right? Which is what I think gives him such texture as a character. But back to the Jar Jar stuff, just ever so briefly, because we have to do the Jar Jar stuff. Jar Jar somehow notices the tanks before any of the clones do. This is the most effective Jar Jar has ever been, like, by far, right? Like, that is his whole shtick, right? But he's actually effective here, which I appreciate. He alerts the clones. Commander Stone does the smart thing and is like, wherever Jar Jar goes, chaos follows. So let's send Jar Jar out to negotiate with them, because I am almost certain that whatever happens with him will cause chaos over there. And sure enough, he is 100% correct in what happens. Yeah. But, you know,
Jar Jar immediately slips and falls forward onto the driver of one of the tanks, knocking him into the control panel.
which collides, which forces the tank to ram another one for both of them to collide with the power supply lines, which shuts down the, you know, the grid. But we did get ahead of ourselves a little bit back.
Oh, yeah.
Back Hondo is talking to the Jedi, and he's getting increasingly annoyed, specifically with Anakin kind of being a dick to him. So he's like, well, clearly negotiations have failed. So he chooses to torture Anakin and Obi-Wan, which is a bit intense.
So it's Anakin, basically, he Hondo says, you know, something, and Anakin's just like calls him a liar, right? He basically calls him out for Hondo is actually lying, but Hondo is insulted by this, of course. And we get a great line here. Where it's, and I don't know if, I don't think I have it, but, you know, Hondo says something to the effect of like, you refused my hospitality, you refused to stay in your cells, and now you insult me.
Yeah.
Oh man, I get so much joy out of the voice acting and the writing, and the animation for Hondo. It's just so good. So he begins torturing them with electrical currents while Dooku remains locked up, and it's not long, luckily for Anakin and Obi-Wan, before Jar Jar sends the tanks on a collision course with the power lines, subsequently completely shutting off the power to the entire base. The Weequays do actually try to respond, but the clones have taken advantage of this distraction to move in. And I guess I don't know if they kill them or if they just tie them up. Hard to say. I believe they're held at gunpoint.
I assume they just tie them up. I wouldn't imagine that the clones would just like slaughter a bunch of idiot Weequays.
Never know. Well, anyways, the power goes out. And this immediately, of course, leads to just virtually instantaneous escape for both Anakin and Obi-Wan, as well as Dooku.
Yeah, Dooku just kills Turk straight up.
Yeah.
So Turk kind of got what it was coming to him, but he kills Turk and steals a ship and just takes off, just gets out of there.
Dooku's escape is quite badass, actually.
That's what I'm saying. He decided to break a sweat for a little bit. He's had enough of these fun and games. He's been extremely annoyed by Anakin and Obi-Wan this entire time, you know? So he's like, all right, it's time for me to leave.
Yeah.
I'll actually try for a little bit.
Yeah. He breaks out of his cell, strangles the door guard. When he walks out to the ship, the Turk and one of the other Weequay are like, they're like running off to go take it to escape because they figure Hondo's probably going to find out what they did. And he picks, I believe he actually, it's Turk that he actually picks up with the force, starts choking him. Turk goes for his blaster and he basically force controls Turk to use his blaster to shoot the other Weequay before killing him and throwing him to the side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hardcore. Like, this is like, oh yeah, Dooku's a Sith Lord.
Remember, this is a children's show, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. but it's okay because they're aliens. Right.
Mm-hmm. No, it was a good thing that this was on Cartoon Network and not on Disney Plus at the time, because they would, or whatever Disney XD, I think is what it was.
Right. It would not have flown on that channel.
No, it would not have. He manages to escape. And Obi-Wan and Anakin retrieve their lightsabers and take Hondo hostage, and stroll outside, and basically they meet Jar Jar, and Obi-Wan actually tells Anakin, you know, why don't we just let Hondo go? And Anakin's a little bit questioning that, and he's like, look, we don't really have any quarrel with him. Dooku already escaped. And I actually love this scene a lot, but Hondo, you know, commends the Jedi on their honor, and Obi-Wan's like, oh, we may be honorable, but I can assure you that Dooku is going to have no such qualms. And you can see the gears turning in Hondo's head. They're like, oh crap. Like, I have definitely upset Dooku now. And there's a good chance that he comes back and just wipes out, you know, the base.
Yeah. Right. it's pretty funny because Hondo is very surprised, I think, by this turn of events, right? That's not exactly the response that he expects from people. But my theory is that this moment where Obi-Wan is you know, sort of like, you know, we have no quarrel with you and we seek no revenge. And you hear in Hondo's voice, I think in the voice acting is very telling. It's indeed very honorable, Master Jedi. But the way he says it, he's like sort of surprised and like almost touched. You know, like he sort of takes this, I think, as like sort of like a personal gesture, even though Obi-Wan then is sort of like, you know, implies like we don't need to seek revenge because we know that Count Dooku will. You know, so there's no point in us coming back for you or trying to take you prisoner.
Right.
My theory is that this is the point in time where Hondo first begins to think of Obi-Wan as a friend. Which is a callback that we get and when we see Hondo again in Rebels, and he tells Ezra that he was friends with a Jedi once a long time ago. I think he actually says one of his best friends was a Jedi.
Yeah, he's a little liberal with although it might actually be one of his best friends. You know, you don't know what his friends are.
This may very well be one of the friendliest things anyone has ever done for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so again, I feel like it's a tough episode to rate. Like on the one hand, it is in no small way a Jar Jar episode. Jar Jar is instrumental to the plot. But on the other hand, it's also a Hondo episode and a Dooku episode. And they're both great. And, you know, we've got great lines with Anakin and Obi-Wan. Like, there is a lot to really like about this episode. I just, for me, like, Jar Jar can still be annoying at times. But I'm inclined to just be like, you know what? I didn't mind it this episode. And give it an 8.
Yeah, I'd also give it an 8. I mean, the thing about Jar Jar is that he's actually, like, as annoying as Jar Jar is, most of Jar Jar being annoying in this is just he is Jar Jar, right? Like, he's actually very effective as far as moving the plot forward in a meaningful and positive way, right? Like, his bumbling nature this time benefits the protagonist. And secondary, he actually shows a little bit of talent in terms of saving the clones by having them jump into the geyser and in terms of detecting the tanks before the clones saw them. So Jar Jar is competent in this episode, which elevates him in my eyes. And yeah, I mean, we get more Dooku, Anakin, Obi-Wan. We get more Hondo. I really, really like the last scene with Obi-Wan kind of giving that remark to Hondo about like, hey, we're not your enemy. We don't have a quarrel with you. But just so you're aware, it's likely that Dooku absolutely has taken offense to this. So I really like that. So yeah, I mean, an 8 seems reasonable to me. A 7.5 for the first one, an 8 for the second one. And you know, again, we said it last week, it's a season 1 8, right? It's not like, yeah, you know, we're going to hit some 8s later on in Clone Wars that I feel like are substantially better than this. But I enjoyed these two episodes. I watched them once through and then I was like, you know what? I could do that again. And I watched them a second time through. I already liked them more than I liked the preceding arc. So, well, with the exception of Leia Grievous, which I really liked, but I liked it more than I liked the first two episodes of the preceding arc.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. And, you know, again, we're introducing Hondo into the series here, which is a character that, we're going to have a lot of fun with as the seasons continue on. And, man, it's hard. It's been a while since I've watched very much of season one of this show. And I kind of forgot that there were actually a lot of episodes that I really enjoyed. And so I'm really being pleasantly surprised as we go through. And I can only think that my enjoyment has been helped by the fact that we did get some later season episodes in early on to kind of bolster, you know, what otherwise has largely kind of been season one straight through so far.
Yeah, and season one, we knew going into it as like a medium as far as TV shows go, right? Like, season one has some good stuff in it, but for the most part, it's one of the weaker seasons, and it's just like a string of like average episodes back to back to back. Now, next, we've got another two-parter. We've got Jedi Crash and Defenders of the Peace. Weirdly, I feel like I remember these two episodes pretty well, mostly because of like the accents of the little rolling monkeys that exist in it. Yeah. So I'm interested to see. I don't recall this being one of my favorite episodes, but I'm interested to watch it again. We do get Aayla Secura, which is pretty cool. She's a neat character. I always enjoy seeing the other Jedi Masters at work, so I'm looking forward to that. And then we've got Trespass, which is a standalone episode, which that episode I actually really like. But I think this week we're just going to do Jedi Crash and Defenders of the Peace. And then Trespass is a standalone. And then we've got Blue Shadow Virus and Mystery of a Thousand Moons, which is really lowly rated on IMDb. But I remember this two-parter as well. And I actually kind of like this one too. So I'm interested to see how I feel about that. But then we get to the real meat and potatoes of season one, the finale, the three-parter, Storm Over Ryloth, Innocence of Ryloth, and Liberty on Ryloth. And I love that arc. And I'm really excited to get to that stuff. So
yeah,
we got a couple more episodes and then we're done with season one.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it's flown by. And it's funny here, you know, Trespass really kind of falls between two-part storylines. So we could kind of fit it in wherever makes sense, you know. We could tag it on to the end of next week's episode, or we could put it at the beginning of the episode following. So,
or we can do a short little standalone episode sometime.
We can do just a single standalone. Take it easy. Just talk about a single episode.
Yeah. We've had a stretch now, starting with Malevolence, I think, where we've pretty much run straight through season one. Like, we haven't really jumped around a little bit. But I think that kind of changes in season two. I think season two does a weird thing where some of the last episodes of the season are like right up at the front of season two. So that'll be a little more interesting. And then it gets all out of whack in season three and stuff like that. So, we should have a good time, but yeah, it's been pretty much a straight stretch for us in season one so far.
Yeah. Yeah, it has, and I've been having a ton of fun. I'm very excited to get as well to the Ryloth arc. I have to admit, I'm not as big a fan of the next two storylines. I'm curious to see how I feel about them. I feel like my memories of them kind of leave me with sort of mixed, like some good, some bad. So I'm curious to see how they land. Like I said, it's been a while since I've watched season one, probably a few years. Since I've watched any of the first season aside from Ryloth.
Do you remember Trespass at all?
I don't know. Which, that I
with Senator Chuchi.
Oh, I do it? Remember Trespass, yeah. Actually. Trespass, yeah.
Trespass is good. Trespass is good. It has this like super good horror vibe going on at the beginning. I didn't love as much where they ended up with it, although it was a very Star Wars, you know, twist on the story, because Star Wars rarely does real horror. But it'll sometimes use horror elements and then turn it back into. I really like Trespass, and Chuchi has become such an important character through and through with the Bad Batch that I'm even more excited for Trespass now because like of how important her character ended up being later on. And I'm also really excited for the conclusion to Bad Batch when season three comes out. So
yeah,
we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, for sure. I guess when I said the next two story arcs, what I was talking about is the Lerman arc and then the Blue Shadow Virus arc.
Yeah, the Lerman arc is definitely an arc. Like that is what it is. The Blue Shadow Virus, I think I'd know. Well, people don't like Blue Shadow Virus because it's a Padme episode, and then people don't like Mystery of a Thousand Moons, I would assume, because it's like got the weird little like lost boy type story, right? Which like I don't think that that's like a super popular trope. It's been done, you know, to death a gazillion times, but I have not rewatched these episodes voluntarily in a long time. So like you, it'll be interesting to see what I think of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see how they land for me as well. So, well, that brings us, I think, to the end of this episode. It's been fun. And I'm looking forward to continuing on. So until next time, may the force be with you.
And also with you.